I saw as I was coming in here that some people had bought some of the CDs of my talks in Malaysia. And I had Ajahn Brahm's best talks or whatever, about 31 of them. You can get these compilations with 100, 200 talks from the internet. And so it's very difficult. Everything which I can possibly talk about, I've talked about. But this evening, I found something different to talk about. Because just as a joke, as I was coming in here, I said, somebody asked me, what are you talking about? And I said, I didn't know. And so the idea came into my mind, this evening I'll give a talk about coffins. So this evening's talk will be about Buddhism and coffins. And I've never talked about that before. So before you get out the door and think, this is really crazy, I'm spending my Friday night listening to a weird monk talking about coffins. Stay with me for a while and we will see just how, when you use any subject and you apply Buddhism to it, you can get some incredible, interesting aspects which help you live a much better life and give you strategies to solve many problems in your life. And the reason why I give talks like this is because, yes, I do like weirdness. And I do like investigating. Even during the period when I went on a rains retreat, I did a visit outside of Perth. Because you're allowed 7 days during your retreat to go and give talks somewhere. And that was to the World Computer Conference to give a keynote talk. I don't know anything about computers. But I gave a keynote at the World Computer Conference. And why did I do that? Because it was weird. And I like doing weird stuff. And it's amazing just what you can do with anything. And number one, that shows like a bit of confidence. So don't just think in your work, in your life, I don't know anything about this. I'll let you into a secret. Neither does anybody else. So that way that you can just be confident and just respond to situations which you've never been prepared for. You know, a lot of people fail to be successful and happy in life just because of fear. The fear of failure, of the fear of messing up. And as for me, I'm not afraid. I've just got nothing to lose. When I started teaching many years ago, I thought, well, if I give good talks and people like it, that's wonderful. I can actually serve and make people happy. But if I'm a terrible speaker and people just walk out the door, that's even better. And I can become a hermit. I always wanted to become a hermit, but people don't let me. I remember once just going into, I found this beautiful monastery in the north of Thailand. And, you know, unfortunately, whenever we have these monasteries, we have all these ceremonies and celebrations, like, you know, the Katina celebrations, Dhammasara tomorrow, and Bodhinyana Monastery, or the Jhana Grove Retreat Center tomorrow. And all these celebrations, and monks are there just to like peace and quiet. They like stillness. They don't like all these people. It just really gets into our head and really stirs us up. But nevertheless, it's a nice thing to be able to give and share. So share all our peace which we've generated over the 3 months meditating in our monasteries, to share it for you and blow the whole lot on one day of celebration. But it's good fun anyway. But anyway, I was in this monastery in the north of Thailand. I was having a really nice meditation and there was a ceremony on. I think it was actually Waisak Day. You know, Waisak, the big celebration, celebrating the birth, enlightenment and passing away of the Buddha. But I was at that ceremony and I was the only Western monk there. All the rest were Thais, because in those days there weren't many sort of foreign monks in Thailand, and I was one of them, and I could speak Thai at that time. So when people found out there was a Western monk and he could speak Thai, look, they've been talking to the Thai monks just for years and years and years, and they're bored stiff with that. And when these Thai monks gave the sermon, they were bored stiff with that as well. So they came and saw me. You know, instead of listening to the sermons all day. And they came up to me and said, why did you become a monk? You know, you're a Westerner. And they were really interested why I became a monk. And they wondered, what did your parents do, you know, for a living? You know, and what town did you come from? And how many brothers and sisters have you got? And I thought, well, what's that got to do, you know, with Buddhism or Dhamma? But they were more interested in me. They don't mind, you're kind as a monk. So the first couple of people who came up to tell me that, I didn't mind. When it came about the 20th person who came up and said, why do you become a monk? How many brothers and sisters have you got? You know, what country do you come from? I got very fed up. So what I did, in a gap, one person or the 20th person left me alone. Then I ran off. I got into my hut very quickly. And I took a water bottle, a mat, and a flashlight. And I sneaked into one of the caves. Because in that area there's very beautiful deep caves, which were wonderful for meditating. And of course I'd explored those caves before. So I went into one of the deepest of those caves. Now it was about, maybe about 200 meters deep. You had to climb up a rickety ladder and go left this way and right that way, and you went right to the very end of this chamber. You know, zigzag all over the place. And in the end of the chamber, I could sit down and have some peace at last. Oh, it was just so nice in there. I sat down, turned off the flashlight, and started meditating. I'd escaped. But only for about 5 minutes. Because then I heard this sound. And the sound was getting louder and louder and louder. So I opened my eyes. And just at the last bend of the cave, I saw a light at the end of the wall getting brighter and brighter and brighter. And I realized what was happening. These Thai lay people were coming to find me. But I had one chance. I almost thought I made it and could escape. Because as the light came closer, two of the Thai villagers put their head around the corner. Well, actually one did, first of all. And he looked at me in shock, and he pulled his head back. And I could hear him just round the corner, talking to his friends. And he was saying, there's a ghost at the end of the tunnel. There's a ghost there. Because, you know, they only saw me very quickly. And as a white monk, they thought I was a ghost. And I thought, great. Keep thinking like that and run off. But then what happened next was that two of the men put their head round the corner very quickly and they looked at me and they got back and said, it's not a ghost, it's a Western monk. No, it's not, it's a ghost. No, it's a Western monk. And then two or three of them came round and they had a look. No, it's a Western monk. So then they all came up to me and they asked, why did you become a monk? How many brothers and sisters have you got? And I realized you cannot escape these things. So a lot of times we just have to just accept our karma, accept our fate. That if you become a monk, many people will come and ask you silly questions. Some people ask me nice questions. If you get married, doesn't matter what wife you get married to, she'll always nag. If you marry your husband, you'd always want to go out to watch this footy or the things you don't want to do. That's the nature of marriage. That's the nature of being a monk. That's the nature of everything. So after a while, you just accept your lot in life. And then when it gets to coffins, we've got to accept that. That's where we're all going to end up. So number one, for those of you thinking of investing in real estate, the only house you ever really need, the one you're going to spend most time in, is a wooden one, 6 foot long, about a foot and a half wide, and about 1 foot deep. It's your coffin. So everything else, when you worry about the property market in Perth because you want to invest, forget about that. The only market which really is important to you is the coffin market. And isn't it wonderful? It doesn't matter if you're a rich person or a poor person. You all end up in a box. And it's all about the same time. You know, all these very, very wealthy people like Twiggy Forrest, he doesn't have like a multi-story coffin when he dies. You know, with a jacuzzi and a bar and a family room. So we have the same. So that's one of the nice things, that all the differences between people. Why do we think that some people are smart and some people are stupid, some people are rich and some people are poor, some people are clever and some people are not, some people are famous? We all end up in the same place, and isn't that nice? We begin with nothing, just coming out of our mother's womb, just bare with nothing at all. And we end up with nothing. So all this idea of acquisitiveness, of getting things, you know, after a while, that's all we have left. The same coffin, no matter how rich or poor we are. And to me, that's quite nice. It's like an equalizer, which means all of our pride and conceit to thinking, I am better than others. I have made it in life. I have got the big house by the river. I have got the Ferrari car. You cannot fit that into your coffin. Have you seen how big a Ferrari is? You cannot get that into the grave. Although some people have tried. I went to one funeral once. And people made this coffin because sometimes, this is Chinese people, be careful. We always want to do the very, very, very best, you know, for our loved ones, for our father, our mother or something. And so they got the most expensive coffin in the catalogue. And it had all these knobs on the outside. And so many that when they were lowering it into the grave wasn't wide enough. It got stuck. That was really funny because the poor old, you know, those of you who've been to funerals, you see the funeral directors lowering it in and they couldn't lower it any further. It was stuck. So they tried to pull it up and they couldn't put it up either. It was stuck halfway. That was one of the most memorable funerals I went to. And why did it get stuck? Because it's too bloody big. They put too much stuff on it. Look, you can't take it with you. It's so simple. Just the bugs are going to eat it, that's all. So what's the wasting all this stuff for? But, you know, I was very, very compassionate and wise. So usually when they lower the coffin in a Buddhist funeral, we do some chanting. We do that chanting just, you know, give the people something to think about, listen to, instead of, you know, worrying about they're taking my granddad away or something so they don't cry. So they were lowering it and I was chanting. And I was chanting. And I was chanting. It is only, you know, one chant we usually do, the Metta Sutra, and it only lasts about 3 minutes. I went to about 6 or 7 times. You know, so the people were trying to pull it up, and I was so pleased they managed actually to drag it out so I could stop my chanting. I was getting hoarse. So, the moral of that story, why do you want big coffins for? It's just conceit, that's all. And this pride. You know, even when you have a big house, as I keep on saying here, look, how many rooms can you live in one go? And when you have these enormous houses like I see being built these days, you know what's happening? It's every person in that house has their own room. Your daughter has one room, your son has another room, your wife goes in one room, you go in another room. Where the heck is the family? When I grew up, you know, because my father was poor, I often say we were so poor we weren't afraid of burglars. We'd leave the door open sometimes, hoping a burglar would come in, take pity on us, and leave something. But anyway, it was just a small council house, about how many rooms were there? 2 bedrooms, 1 dining room, and a tiny kitchen, and that was it. But that was a lovely home to grow up in. Because I had to share a room with my brother. Now, like 2 males, we'll always fight. Because, you know, I've seen in the monasteries, you go down Dharmasara, you go to Serpentine, now's the time the joeys come out of the pouch. And these little animals, even the baby kangaroos, you can see them fighting together. It's sort of playing, but I'm sure there's a lot of jealousy there as well. And that's what it is like growing up. You know, your jealousy, you know, your brother and me fighting. I don't know what we were fighting for. We used to fight. But we were in the same room together, so we had to learn how to get on. And I often think it would be wonderful, it would have been wonderful if Osama bin Laden and George Bush, W. Bush, if they'd have grown up in the same bedroom together. So, you know, get all their fighting out of the way and learn how to love one another. Because we were in a small house, living together, we actually learn how to cooperate. And how to live in harmony, even though we had different ideas. And that meant small houses are where you learn how to love and have cooperation and live in harmony with other people. Because there's no place to run away to. Unfortunately, now in our big houses, there's so many places you can go when you're fed up. You had an argument with your wife, go into another room. And I had a run-in with your dad, and you can just go and hide in your room. Because we're not close together, we lose those wonderful social skills, which what a family was all about in the old days. Closeness, being close together. So, big houses, they cost a lot of money. You go into great debt. You have to work your butt off to pay your mortgage. And you're always worrying whether the interest rate is going to rise, because that really affects your finances. And look, you don't really need that. So small is beautiful. Anyway, you only need that 6 foot long, 1.5 feet wide in the end. So don't be conceited, and don't measure your happiness by the size of your house or how big the car is. To me, that's being stupid. Wise people have small houses, really nice families. They're together, squashed together, and that's wonderful. And they can even, as I went to a funeral a week ago, and all the people in the eulogy, they kept on saying how wonderful it is that their father insisted the whole family had dinner every night together. And he wouldn't take any no for an answer. We always have dinner together. And that was a fact. And he kept that so strictly. And that meant the family would always change appointments so they would be together. That degree of smallness being beautiful is wonderful. And the only reason why we don't have these small houses today is because we feel we've got to show off to our friends and to our neighbours. We're getting somewhere in life. Look at my house. Look at the suburb. We're going big, wonderful. No, please don't do that. Keep it small. And keep it warm. And keep it loving. And keep it in harmony. Even in this life, you shouldn't really be measured by how big your dwelling is. And coffins show you, at the end of your life, you're not going to be measured by how big your coffins are. They're all the same size. In fact, if you look at the Perth Cemeteries board, they actually give you the dimensions, and you can't go above those dimensions. They even give you the weight. However, sometimes you don't have to order the coffin from a normal person. You can make your own. And I remember this young lady, when her husband Steve died, they made him a special coffin. And that was one of my favorite funerals. Because, you know, you're white water rafting. And so they decided to make a coffin which was so similar to the thing they love most of all. So they made this box themselves with a couple of oars on the top. Unfortunately, it was the right size, but the wrong weight. It was far too heavy. So when they put the coffin on that conveyor thing, and we did the ceremony, and we pressed the button, and the screen opened for the coffin to go behind. And then the screen closes again. You know that? You know, you've been to funerals before. But the coffin was so heavy, the poor motor couldn't pull it. So it went halfway in, and then the screen closed, and it was only halfway through. And I never forget the expression on the funeral directors. His worst fear comes when something goes wrong with a funeral. Because, you know, you've got people's loved ones. You've got their emotions in your hands, and you stuff up. This lady here, I remember you. She was on top of the coffin pushing it. And people say, what, are you trying to get rid of him that bad? And then someone else joked, yeah, just like Steve, because one of his old friends, he said, the first day he got his car, he crashed that. Now the first day he's in his coffin, he crashes his coffin. And that made just the whole ceremony a beautiful ceremony of laughter, of fun, of remembering what Steve would have really loved. People to enjoy his life. And to laugh and have fun and remember the sort of things which he would approve of. The coffin which got stuck funeral, I always remember that. Now, the reason I say this, and the reason why I'm bringing these things up, is because we can take these coffins which has negative associations for us. And by changing our perception, we can make it positive, fun, and even very deep and profound ways of letting go of things which cause us too much suffering. How many times in our life do we take something and straight away give it a negative association? And that is the problem. Cancer. You just even mention that word, and I don't want to remind that. I've maybe have got cancer myself, or I know someone, my loved one, who's dying of cancer, or someone who's died of cancer. Why is it that some words have these negative associations? And if you give it that negative association, that makes it much, much worse. So part of Buddhism is actually looking at the way we perceive the world and how we have these triggers of negativity which are not really necessary. They hurt us, they harm us, and we can do much better. We don't have to think of coffins as being something negative. They can be something beautiful. We don't need to think of cancer as being something negative. We can see it, and I'm saying this carefully, as something beautiful. In my position as a monk, you meet many people with cancer. Usually give a talk every year at the Cancer Support Association and other places. And because being a monk and being a person who you go to when you're in big trouble, I've met so many people at cancer talks, at cancer associations, just come to the monastery. When they first said this, I didn't believe them. But so many people have said it. I'm just repeating what I've heard hundreds of times. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. Not everyone says that. And when I first heard that, I said, what do you mean? It's painful, it's unpleasant. And he said, but I learned so much about myself, about life, what really matters to me in life. It was a painful journey and very unpleasant. But what they got at the end of that journey, the wisdom, the compassion, the understanding of what real love is, what the value of life is, they said was worth it. Now, I have never gone through chemotherapy or radiation therapy yet. Probably will do later on in life because it happens to most of us. And it is, so I don't know, but people tell me how unpleasant and painful that really is. But that somebody would say it was worth it is a very amazing thing to say. Why? It is because we go through life taking so many things for granted, just scratching on the surface of life's meaning and never really understanding deeply what on earth we're doing on this planet, in this human life. When something like cancer comes, it changes all of our priorities. Just making money and enjoying yourself and getting on in life, and it's not so important anymore. The stock market, how your footy team are going, just the sort of things which many people worry about no longer have importance. And in their place, the time you spend with your loved ones, your family, your friends, your deep spirituality becomes really important. And sometimes you think, why didn't I understand that beforehand? Why didn't someone tell me that the main reason of life, you know, is not to get your mortgage paid off? Your main reason in life is not to get enough money so you can retire. The main reason of life is learn how to love. Learn how to forgive. Learn how to be at peace with yourself. No matter what is happening to you. No matter who you are. So I said last week? I think I did. To be able to love, you don't need to have perfection. Because if you're looking for the perfect person, you'll never find a partner in life. And why? Because you're not perfect. If you're looking for a perfect house, a perfect job, a perfect anything, you'll never find it in life. And sometimes we go around life looking for this perfection. My teacher Ajahn Chah used to say it's like looking for the tortoise with a mustache. And he said that because, you know, there's no such thing as tortoises with moustache. They just don't exist. But many of us spend our whole life just looking for the tortoise with the moustache. Perfection. The perfect partner, the perfect relationship, the perfect job, the perfect anything. And you never find it. Why? Because you're looking in the wrong place. Spirituality makes you see perfection anywhere, in anything. You go into the forest. Go into the forest at our monasteries, Dharamsala tomorrow, or Serpentine on Sunday. You go in there and look at the trees. The trees are all over the place. They're not in lines and rows. If they were in lines and rows, it would be planted by Karma. It would be a plantation. It's not real native forest. And those trees, some are dying. They're all over the place. They've got knobs and branches off them, all higgledy-piggledy, sort of leaning this way and that way. Every one of those is a so-called imperfect tree. And that's why it's beautiful. Because when I go into those forests, with leaves and twigs all over the place, some trees dead, some on the ground, lying all over the place, I get a lot of peace. You know why? Because it's natural. Natural means it reminds me of the way life is. And that all my trying to straighten up the trees, to fix up the broken branches, and to make all these trees perfectly straight with perfect branches and perfect leaves, all in the right dimensions and spacings, is a total waste of time. And in fact, if I try that hard to perfect the forest, I'm actually making it worse. The forest is beautiful as it is. And then I go and see the people who I know. And each one of you have got faults, big faults. But I love you as you are. And I wouldn't want you to be any different. You are like those trees in the forest. Some of you lean this way, some of you lean that way. You've got warts and scars and bumps on you just like those trees in the forest. Some of you are missing many leaves. Some of you got false teeth. Some of your hair's falling out. You are absolutely imperfect. And isn't it wonderful that you are? That's just your body, let alone your character and your mind. But do I want to change you? Any of you who come on any of my retreats, again, I'm teaching back-to-back retreats this time. The retreat I'm teaching at Jhana Grove is finishing tomorrow at 2 p.m. And then we have a katina tomorrow. Next Friday, another retreat I'm teaching, back-to-back retreats. And those retreats have to deal with people at all different stages of their meditation. Some people can't meditate for their lives, but they give it a go. But nevertheless, they come into the interviews and they say, oh, I just can't even watch my breath for a second. I've been sleeping all the time. Actually, they said I went into the kitchen and I got myself a sandwich. I know I'm breaking the rules. It was in the afternoon. I'm not supposed to do this. I'm hopeless. And I always say the same response. I say, very good. And after a while, people actually ask me, say, look, whatever I say, you say, very good. What's heck's going on? And I say, very good. What I'm saying is I'm acknowledging that that's all right, that you are all right. Because this is what we learn when we change our perceptions of things which give us negativity. Coffins aren't that negative. It's just we add that fear, that negativity to them. They're very beautiful. I don't know if you've seen these amazing coffins. They're made out of Jarrah wood and they're polished and they look sort of wonderful. It's the most beautiful piece of cabinet work you probably will ever, especially get to lie in. And it's really comfortable. They have these beautiful cushions and silk and lace in there. It's very effeminate, but even sort of footy stars will probably end up in one of those. So there you are, it's this beautiful thing, but we give it a negative connotation. There you are, your faults in life, your idiosyncrasies, the things which you do, which you are ashamed of, you wish you didn't do. No, change your attitude. And instead of looking at them as faults, we look upon them as features. As I said, if you look at the night sky. Up in Serpentine, we're on the top of the scarp, so we see some beautiful sunsets up from our monastery, and also from Jhana Grove, the meditation center there. It actually looks out over to the valley, and you can see the sort of the ocean and the sunsets there. It's gorgeous. But the best sunsets only occur when there's a few imperfections on the horizon, a few clouds or a bit of smoke. And when it's imperfect, you get this beautiful spread of crimsons and purples and golds when the sun goes down. Without those, it wouldn't be beautiful. And so I look at the imperfections of the forest, and it makes it beautiful. I look at the imperfections of people, and it makes you lovable. If you were so perfect and good, if you were all arahats, if the monks I live with were all fully enlightened and totally compassionate and peaceful, there would be a pain in the ass to stay with. Why? Because they're not human. They're like robots. There's just no personality, nothing there. So look, when you change your attitude and look at things which one day you thought were negative, and now you say, actually, that's not so bad. Then you understand the meaning of the talk with Buddhism and coffins. Because there's some great stories which I have of coffins, and they're very funny stories. Look, one of our monks, not our monks, but one of the monks I know, you know, he's over in Sydney. Before he became a monk, he was a funeral director. And he's got some great stories. I'm not sure if it was him or one of the other funeral directors told me. You know, in Adelaide, if any of you are from Adelaide, don't die there. Come to Perth. Because in the cemetery, or the main cemetery, or one of the main cemeteries in Adelaide, It's in a depression. It's in like a hollow. It's a low-lying part of the city. And the earth is clay. Not like sand, you know, in Karakata or Fremantle, but it's clay. And so what actually happens is, you know, they dig the hole and they do the beautiful ceremony and they're lowering the coffin and they lower it down to the bottom. And then there's a rainstorm. And because it's in a hollow, all the water goes into the hole. Because it's clay, the water's got nowhere to go. So it fills the hole up. And during the ceremony, the coffin floats back up. That's all the loved ones, especially the Chinese, would run away. Now that really is inauspicious. You just got rid of your dad, and he comes back up again. He also told me the story that this life, I mean, life isn't meant to be perfect. If it can go wrong, it does go wrong. And so when people come and tell me in their interviews of all the things which go wrong, I just laugh because, yeah, that's life. You know, things do go wrong. So this guy was working in Sydney. And, you know, as well as actually burying them, they've got to collect them. So they were given a call that some old person died in this old apartment block, like block of flats they call it in Sydney, you know, on the top story. It's an old block because everyone had been in this apartment block for years. They all knew each other and they were all getting on in life. And so this poor fellow died. And so they had an elevator there, but the elevator was very tiny. I mean, it was an old building. And so the fellow was on the top story. So they went up there to collect the body. And they had, you know, this wheelie stretcher to put it on, but they couldn't fit that in the lift. And they couldn't take it down the stairs because they lost control of it, you know, banging down the stairs. That would be even worse. So the only thing they thought of, these two guys dressed in black, the funeral directors, was actually to get this dead person and put him vertically and hold him on either side to get him down to the bottom. And then they put him in the wheelie stretcher at the bottom of the elevator. So as they put him in the elevator and held him on either side and pressed a button for the ground floor, they were actually praying, please may nobody interrupt the lift halfway down. But of course, if it can happen, it does happen. So halfway down, you know, maybe on the third story, they go from the top story, the lifts stop, and the doors open, and and there's this little old lady on the other side. Now imagine, this little old lady, she knew the guy had died, and there he was, standing vertically, with these two guys in black on either side. And they said they don't know how this happened, but they lost control of him, and he started falling forward. The poor old lady fainted. They thought for one moment they've got another customer. They did the only thing they could do. They lifted this guy back up again. They closed the door, because they left the old lady till later. And they went back down, put him in the stretcher, and then one of the guys ran up the stairs to cover the old lady. The poor old dear had the biggest shock of her life. But she survived. Now, old ladies are made very tough in Sydney. So sometimes, you know, all the things we're afraid of, they actually can be quite funny. So instead of getting upset at these things, instead of actually having negativity, we can take the negative connotations away and use them in a totally different way. Which means that all the things which other people are afraid of in life, all the people, other things which people get upset at, you don't need to. You can be this wonderful, peaceful, jolly person no matter whatever happens in life. And look, if you've got cancer, is it going to get better if you get negative? Or is it going to get better if you have a positive attitude towards it? One of the nice things about coffins is that we bury the past in the coffins. We either burn them to ashes or we bury them in the ground. But it means it's a beautiful way of letting go. And I saw in the newspaper, I think on Tuesday, there was some conference or some government program, and some people were very upset. They thought that human rights were just being destroyed or something. So they had a coffin, they put human rights in it, and it was going to be the death of human rights. And I thought that actually that might be a beautiful little ceremony we could do. What we could do, we could have little coffins on sale, you know, for a very cheap price here in the Buddhist Society of West Australia, only into small ones. And you can put all your bad memories in those coffins. You can write them down on pieces of paper. All the terrible things which have happened to you so far in your life. Maybe you were abused when you were a child. Maybe you had some great tragedy which really upset you. Or maybe a relationship which was just went terribly, terribly wrong. And you can write that down on a piece of paper. And you can put it in the coffin. And we can close it. And the monks can do a little ceremony for you. And then we can bury it. And then once you've got through your grieving, you're free of your past. Because to me, that's one of the most important things which a coffin signifies. A way of letting go of the pain of the past. You bury it. You let it go. Why? So you can move freely into the future without all this baggage of the past. And that would be a wonderful ceremony to do. Because one of the reasons that people don't have joy and happiness and health, one of the reasons why they don't perform to their total abilities and potential in life, is because we're just so tied down to the pain of our past. And there's so many people in this world, like in Australia, and there's a pretty nice place to live in, but still there's a lot of trauma which people go through by the time they get to your age, let alone in other countries which have natural disasters, political turmoil, and all sorts of other instabilities, which cause huge amounts of suffering which we go through in our lives. And I see too many people who are victims of torture and trauma or of tragedies in life. Too many people, they linger too long in that past. So long that it ruins their health. So long that it cripples their abilities and their potential right now. So they cannot gain happiness. They cannot gain fulfillment. And they cannot give happiness and fulfillment to others as well. They're imprisoned. They're tied by these terrible balls and chains, the rotten things which happened to them in the past. And a lot of meditation, a lot of Buddhist philosophy, a lot of counseling is always to try and liberate people from the pain and tragedy and trauma of the past. And how do you do that? That's one way. Putting it in a coffin, burying it or cremating it in a ceremony. It's almost like these forgiveness ceremonies which we do in Buddhism. Acknowledge what happened. Because acknowledgement happens to be has to come first. Bring it up, acknowledging it, writing on a piece of paper, or saying it out loud. Because once it's acknowledged, it's the first step to freedom. Denying it, hiding it, saying it never happened, never any freedom can happen that way. Honesty, acknowledgement has to happen first. And then some way, once it's acknowledged it, of letting it out and disposing of it. So that in a forgiveness ceremony, you can acknowledge, let it go, and let somebody else dispose of it in a good way. So you can walk out free of the pain of the past. So little coffins become a symbol of that. A way we can acknowledge, write out, put in a box, a coffin, bury or cremate. So you've done it. It's dealt with. And now you can be free. In the same way, it may be your father, your mother, your son, your daughter, your husband or whatever. You don't keep the corpse in the house for the next 20 or 30 years. You dispose of it in a beautiful way. You let go and move on. Because when I die, I don't want people to mourn me. I don't people want to cause any of you more suffering. I've caused you enough suffering already with all these terrible jokes which I've said. Which reminds me of tonight's joke. I hope I haven't said this before. I tried it out on one of our visitors. And it's the coffin joke. There's this one guy one day, he went to the temple. And after the talk, he walked home. But the walk home was past the cemetery. I don't know why this is so, but I remember even in London where I grew up, the street lighting is always darker past the cemeteries. They don't have so many lampposts, I don't know why. So when you go past the cemeteries, you always go into more darkness, and it's spooky, and it's scary. And as this man was walking past the cemetery, he got quite scared. He felt there was bad energy there. He got halfway. Nothing had happened, so he thought it was going to be all right. 3/4 of the way, it was fine. He was just imagining things. But just before he got fully past the cemetery, he could hear something following him behind. Now, if ever that happened to you, you don't want to look behind, do you? You imagine it's just not there. You just carry on walking, but your heart bump, 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 boom, boom, boom. And as he was walking, thinking this was just an imagination, he could hear it more clearly. Because once you're scared, actually your senses get more acute. It was actually something following him. And so he started to walk faster. And the thing following him also walk faster. He listened to it and he realized it's not a human. He knows the sound of steps. This wasn't steps. This was something going bump, 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 bump after him. So he really started walking very fast and he heard this thing behind him. Bump, 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 bump. Keeping up with him. Even though he didn't want to look behind, he had to. And as he looked behind, his heart almost stopped. It wasn't a person. It wasn't a ghost. It was a coffin. A vertical box with earth on it, spider webs which had somehow got out of the grave at the cemetery and was following him. Bump, bump, bump. He started running for his life. And as he ran, bump, 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 a coffin was running after him. Fortunately, he wasn't that far from his home. He ran literally for his life. Bump, 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 bump. The coffin was actually catching up with him. When he reached his front door, he reached for his keys and he dropped them on the ground. That's what you do when you panic. So whenever those things happen to you, remember, just keep calm, just breathe in, breathe out, let things be. That way you don't waste so much time. Fortunately, you could pick up the keys, and he put the key in the lock, turned the lock, opened the door, got inside and closed the lock just as the coffin came to the door. And there he was catching his breath, and he could see through the window on the door, the coffin on the other side, just 6 inches away from him, but the big door was in front. And he thought he was safe. Bang! I tell a good story. Bang! As the coffin started hitting the door, bang! And the door started to give way, it started to splinter, and the hinges started to come off. Bang! Went the coffin against the door. So he ran up the stairs, and he got to the first landing, when the coffin actually broke through the front door, and came running after him. Bump, 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 bump! He ran up the stairs, and the only room with the lock was the toilet. So he went in there and locked the toilet. Had engaged on the outside, but that doesn't stop a coffin. And the coffin started banging against the bathroom door. It was only a matter of time when it would break through. And so the guy was against the wall. His back was literally against the wall. Bang! 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 And the coffin broke through. And there he was with nowhere else to go and the coffin coming for him. Instinctively he reached for something on the shelf to throw at the coffin. It was a bottle. It smashed against the coffin. And the coffin stopped. It was cough mix. It always stops the coffin. That is a terrible joke. Many of you have heard it before, but you haven't heard me tell it. So coffins can be interesting. Now, actually, I saw in a newspaper some time ago that in a monastery in Thailand, they are actually making a lot of money with coffins. And I know that we're talking last week that this place needs a bit of, a few bob, a few dollars to paint the place and clean the windows and stuff. Maybe we should try this, because in this monastery they got maybe 20 or 30 coffins. And what people do, you've always got some bad karma from the past, things you've done which you feel guilty about, or rotten memories and sort of stuff which you shouldn't have done but you did do. And sometimes how can we sort of get rid of that? How can we let all this pain and trouble, and sometimes, you did it, how can you let all of this go so that we can actually be free again, wipe the slate clean, so we can live a good life again? So what they do, they have this coffin ceremony. So as you pay a few dollars to the temple, and you lay in the coffin, and they close the lid, and the monks do some chanting. The same chanting as if you really were dead. So actually, you imagine you're dying. Imagine you are dead. And then the monks do some other chanting to bring you back to life again. And after that chanting, they open up the lid and you're alive again. It's like you're being reincarnated. It's only a ceremony. You don't really die, but they just pretend. And that's a good way, because you're in the coffin, to let go of all the pain of your life, to be reborn again with a sense of freedom from the pain of the past. Psychologically, it has some merit in it. Because we want to learn how to let go. This is just a way of letting go, by getting in a coffin and imagining you're dead. And then waking up, you're going to wake up again. You're going to be alive again. So it's like a rebirth, another chance. Many people, they redo their marriage vows every now and again. Married for so long, let's redo the vows again. And they do a ceremony. It's like being reborn again. You know, but you haven't really sort of got divorced yet when you just redo your marriage vows. So you don't really die again when you get reborn again in this monastery in Thailand. And it's all done in a coffin. Very comfortable, very cheap, and recyclable. Because someone else goes in there after you're finished in half an hour's time. Should we do that, Dennis? People will be scared stiff of going in a coffin. Why are you scared of going in a coffin? Have you ever tried them? They're actually very comfortable. Look, before you actually buy a car, you know, don't you go in a few cars first of all to try to find out the model you want before you die? No, try a few out, a few coffins to find what you want when you die. Actually, that happened here. Is he here today? No, I can't see him, Rodney. But, you know, he actually made a coffin for the monks once. So then we can actually try it out. We can actually sleep in it at night to do the death contemplations and realize, look, you're going to die one day. This is what it's going to be like. So let go of all of your craving, all of your desires and all of your ill will and stuff like that. Because when you know you're going to die, what are you worrying about all this stuff for? It doesn't matter. So one of our monks, it was Ajahn Chattamala, he got in there first of all. He decided he would have the first night in the coffin. It almost killed him. Literally. Because Rodney made his coffin of this, particle board with all these chemicals in it. You know, it's all this glue stuff in the particle board, new particle board. It wasn't sort of sealed or anything. So when he got it and it closed the lid and went to sleep, he was hallucinating. I think he enjoyed that. No, I think it gave him a headache. Because, you know, we monks, you know, we get a little boring life, no TVs, no movies, so a bit of hallucination is a bit of fun. And we realised it was actually the glue and the chemicals in the particle board, because it was in an enclosed place, you know, with a lid on the top, you know, and he realised that, so, you know, we decided we won't let any other monks sort of stay in there. So, but if it's a real coffin, not sort of, you know, a homemade one, maybe it might work. Maybe it just might sort of bring you back to what the real meaning of life is. You know, because that's what, you know, noticing your impermanence, your death, noticing it's not always going to be here. Look, if you know you weren't always going to be here, and all your loved ones weren't going to be here, how would you treat them? And how would you treat yourself? It's a wonderful, many sort of wise people say you should live every day as if this was the last day of your life. In other words, live life to the max. To the full. Because if you do that, one day when you do die, one day is going to be your last day. And then you die with a smile on your face. You live life to the max. Because when you live life like it's going to be your last day, priorities totally change. Finishing off the work is not as important as playing with your child. Doing all this other stuff is not as important, you know, as being with your partner. Spending time with them. Thinking we haven't got time to go on the holiday. But when are you going to find the time? What's really important in life? You know that when it's your last day on this earth. So live every day as if it's your last day. That's why one of my favorite sayings, and I repeat that here. And somebody actually told me that actually that it's just the same father who would actually have the dinner with his kids every night. He was a very workaholic father, and he was one of the people who said, don't put off until tomorrow what you can do today. And I think that's a terrible saying personally, because that means we become workaholics. We're always doing things. We never rest. So my saying is, never do today what you can put off until tomorrow, because you might die tonight. And I add that in, because you might die tonight. So you get all of the washing done, you get all the cleaning done, you get everything done. And what's the point? You're going to die tonight. And you really regret that. What did I mess around and spoil my night getting everything ready for tomorrow morning when tomorrow never came? So to me, I always remember, Ajahn Brahm, never do today what you can put off until tomorrow, because I might die tonight. So I live day by day. And I actually live like that, and sometimes people say, what are you doing tomorrow? I say, I really don't know. You know, even, you know, the my itinerary, what I'm going to do next. That's Ming. She's in the back somewhere. She was selling these amazing calendars at the shop over there, raising funds for the Buddhist Society. So even though you might die tonight and you might not use that calendar, still you need to make the merit and look after our place. So please buy those calendars. Only $11. Very good merit. And again, like last week, if you really want to, I can bless your calendars to make your next year doubly auspicious. Anything to sell those blooming things. But anyway, and to raise money for our centre here. But anyway, where was I going? I forgot. I'm getting old now. Anyway, what was I saying? I forgot. Where was I? You don't know either. He's getting old as well. Our whole committee's getting old. I don't know either. Okay, never mind. Anyway, who cares? Never do today, working to put off tomorrow. That's right. Because Ming, that she's the one who actually asked me where I'm going to be sort of next month or next year. And she writes it all down on Where Is Ajahn Brahm on our website. And actually, that's what I use to find out where I'm supposed to be. I keep forgetting what I'm supposed to do. So I found out what I'm supposed to do tomorrow by looking at a website, Where Ajahn Brahm is. So, you know, it's really nice to live in the present moment because, look, you know, life is not that long. So enjoy it. And every time I plan for the future and start worrying about what's going to happen next, I found in my life anyway that something else happens. Look, I never thought I was going to talk about coffins tonight. And I'm sure none of you, not one of you, thought you were going to come to a Buddhist society and hear a lecture about coffins. If you go home tonight and say, what did Ajahn Brahm talk about? He talked about coffins. And you actually sat here for 1 hour listening to it. They think that you are crazy and I am crazy. But that's what the future is like. It's totally crazy, totally unexpected. And that makes it really beautiful. So if I gave a talk on something you expected, it wouldn't be worthwhile coming, would it? If it was a talk on some Buddhist philosophy which you could read in a book, what's the point? So this evening I've given a talk about coffins and their relevance to life, not to relevance to death. What I've done here is say that whatever there is in life, you can always make use of it, anything, to be better human beings, to really understand life more and understand yourself more, and to be able to love what other people find they fear. So where other people find fear, you find wisdom, love, compassion, and laughter. That means you're free. That means you're a special being. Not like other beings in this planet who always mention coffin, they get upset. Don't talk about that. They mention cancer, just no, I don't want to hear it. They mention all this negative stuff which is real in the world. They don't face it. Instead, we face it. We understand it. We learn from it, we can even love it. Loving doesn't mean we like it. Loving is opening the door of your heart to everything. This is life. We can always find a beautiful perception about anything. So that's the talk this evening. Coffins. I haven't talked about that before. I have to find something else to talk about next week, which you haven't heard about before. So any question on coffins? No. Yes, thank you. You're donating your body to research. Have you checked with the scientists yet whether they really want to research you? Now, as for me, people have actually asked in the monastery, what do I want to do? Do you want to get cremated or do you want to get buried? As for me, the yellow recycling bin. At monastery, every Friday, very easy, put yourself in a black bag in a recycling bin. No one will know. They don't check what's inside the bin. It gets in these automatic lifters and it goes in the back and it gets recycled, you know, which is wonderful. So number one, it doesn't cost any money. Number two, it's recycling, so it goes back to nature. And you don't get all these people crying about you or telling all these things about you. It's just really quick and easy. So that's me, yellow recycling bin. Will you let me do that? Anyway, that's true. You can donate it to science. I donate it to the recycling waste facility. Because that's not you. That's just your body. It's just your old car. The driver goes somewhere else. But that's another talk. Okay, so thank you all for listening and putting up with the coffin talk. And I do apologize for the coffin joke, but I thought it was funny.